You hear the
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. It's actually not raining anymore. It's not snowing, and it's beautiful in Westchester. It's kind of cold, but we don't care because the sun's going to shine, and we're going to have a different kind of show today. This is going to be really, really cool. No, we're not going to talk about books, but we're going to talk about something else. We're going to talk about the art of mediation. Whoa. And we're going to talk to a mediator. Her name is Marcia Adelson, and she's joining us right now, and she's going to tell us all about her background. And hi, Marcia, how you doing?
Hey, Fran, I'm doing well, and I'm happy as can be that the sun came out today because it's been sorely lacking.
Yeah, I know, and yesterday it had the nerve to snow, and I lost my sister 4 years ago, and she always told me she controlled the weather. So I had a word with her last night, and I said, Marcia Joyce, can I have some sunshine, please? So I'm hoping that the sun shines some more because it's been kind of
Thank you for having that conversation.
I do. Somebody's got to talk to her up there. She promised to control the weather, you know, constantly. So tell us about your background and what exactly you do so that everybody understands.
Well, I'm an attorney, but you don't need to be an attorney to be a mediator. But I am an attorney, and for more than 10 years, I've been representing customers in claims against financial services firms. And I've enjoyed it, and, you know, I've done a lot of good work. But litigation is so expensive. It's just so expensive that I thought there's got to be a better way to resolve these disputes. So I started looking into mediation. Some of my cases had settled through mediation, and I really believed in it because it was just a great way to resolve the dispute and for everybody to move on, because that's what you really want. The plaintiff wants to be heard, the defendant wants to be heard, and then, okay, let's accept whatever's happened, and let's find a way for everybody to move forward. So that's how I got into mediation, as a way to resolve disputes for less money, less time, less emotion, less agitation, less aggression. And mediation's just great. It really allows people to have a voice, say what happened to them. The defendant gets an opportunity to say why that didn't happen. And there's a conversation, and people get to engage in a conversation rather than litigation. And you can resolve the dispute. Find some place between where the two parties are so that everybody walks away happy. And to me, it's just such a powerful tool. It's such a powerful process. And I think people who really believe in mediation have been in litigation, because litigation is just nasty. And then prior to becoming a lawyer, I was a financial planner with what's now Ameriprise Financial Services. And I think that, too, just taught me that there's always a way to match somebody's, you know, needs with what's out there. That if you really listen to somebody, there's always an answer. And I'm just very practical. Yeah. And I just look for an answer that works for everybody.
Which is great, because people walk out and at least they felt like that they've been heard, and they feel, you know, that the dispute has been resolved amicably to both sides. So you just handle financial cases. Do you handle any other kind of law besides that?
For mediation, I handle any type of general commercial case. I've been doing a lot of employment disputes where an employee feels they've been wrongly terminated for sexual discrimination, age discrimination, for an employee was terminated for some reason that is not legal. As I said, commercial claims. I'll also do workplace seminars so that employees can work out problems among themselves better, and also handle customers in a nicer way, so that the customer feels like he or she's being heard, and that dispute's resolved as well. So it works in a lot of situations.
Well, I know what you're saying about age discrimination. My mom when she was, before she got really sick, before she got Alzheimer's, she was working in a specific place in Manhattan. And all of a sudden, all the people, she was in her 60s, not even that old. And yeah, not even old at all. And she came in and she didn't feel well, whatever. She went to, she was in California, came back, and they literally fired her and a whole bunch of other people because they were older. They said their jobs were no longer there. They were no longer needed. So, of course, she got unemployment because Miss Brilliant over here figured out how to do that for her and help her. Yeah, but it was horrible. I mean, I've noticed age discrimination. I've walked into urgent cares, regular doctor's offices or whatever, and I've walked in and I've, you know, shown them my little insurance cards, and until I give them the card, they're fine. Then I give them, you know, GHI or whatever, and they look at me and they go, oh, that's your real date of birth? Can you hear? Are you there? And I go, no, I don't comprehend the thing you said, because all of a sudden I got 20 years older. So age discrimination, work discrimination, I mean, sometimes people are just let go because they're just not the right description of what they want. Do you ever find that? Do you have anything with race discrimination?
Yeah, sometimes there are racial or religious reasons that somebody feels they were terminated. And sometimes that really was the cause of the termination, and sometimes it wasn't. There's also, I have found that a lot of times there's a problem with communication, that people learn things in different ways. Some people learn better by seeing, some people learn better by hearing, some people learn by a combination of the two. And you need to communicate with people in the way they understand best. And I'm not patronize them, but truly communicate them in the way they understand.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't do that. And especially with people who are older, who are less familiar with certain technologies, that a lot of times the, you know, a supervisor will go through something very fast or only look at certain numbers because that's the new, quote-unquote, new tool, where the person has been in the position for a long time and has looked at other measures of success or profitability. And sometimes it's just that the two are communicating on such different planes. But the supervisor has a responsibility to try to communicate with the employee the way the employee can understand. Mm-hmm. It's not discrimination not to, but it leads to a big mess if you don't try.
Yeah, I agree with you. My mother was very smart, and when it came to computers, she learned really fast. And she also learned, she was a full-charge bookkeeper, so she knew how to do pencil and paper. So they had to teach her how to do the programs on the computer. And she was fast. And so was everybody else. They were faster than the younger people there. But
because
she
understood the methodology better.
Yeah, she did. And besides the fact what she didn't understand, she could call my sister who understood everything. It's funny because I became computer literate on my own here. And my sister was absolutely brilliant. She used to type my term papers until I got a computer. It was great. For that, I would buy her a present and take her to lunch. I miss her. It's amazing. So before you do a mediation, what preparations do you have to make? What do you have to do first?
I think it's key for everybody to be prepared for mediation to be successful. Mm. And oftentimes people aren't. For the mediator, what you need to do is you need to communicate with the parties. You need to understand what the dispute is about.
Mm-hmm.
You need to remain impartial and remain neutral, but you need to understand both sides of the dispute. So these are, for the disputes I've mediated, they're all lawsuits. So each lawsuit has what's called a complaint, with the plaintiff serves on the defendant that starts the lawsuit, saying this is what you did wrong. This is what I am claiming you did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then the defendant answers. So those documents are always available. They're available online. I can read them. It's great. Then after we set a date, me and the attorneys and the parties set a date, I asked the attorneys to provide me with a summary of where they are in settlement negotiations, what they see the issues to be, what they see to be the range of potential damages that either they want or they're prepared to pay, who's liable, why or why not, and just to give me a breakdown as they see it of what the dispute is. After I receive those, I have a brief conversation with the attorneys to introduce myself, to find out what the attorneys expect from the mediation process, what they expect from me, what they see as the challenges to their case, to make sure whoever has authority to settle is going to be attending the mediation, because you don't want a missing person. You don't want to get to the point of we have an agreement and somebody says, oh, no, this person has to say yay or nay. You don't want that. And then we talk about the process for the mediation, how it will be conducted, and so everybody's ready to go when we show up. And I find that if you do all these steps, it helps for a more successful mediation. The other thing is it helps if the attorneys set reasonable expectations with their client. Because very often, especially the plaintiff, has very high expectations for damages. And they might get all those damages if they went through the whole trial process, went to trial, and won on every point. But that could be years in the making. So
don't
to settle today,
it.
You're not going to get all of that money that you might get 3, 4, 5 years from now. And then attorneys don't always explain that to their client, that to settle today, you take a fraction of that bigger number. And that's often a roadblock because the plaintiff has, you know, decided that's what they deserve, that's what justice is, and that becomes a roadblock to settlement.
No, I do know what you're saying because I had a choice recently, just right this minute actually, of going to arbitration, I was told, a mediation, or taking action. I didn't know I had I was never told that I had a growth in my jaw for 12 years. And unfortunately, my dentist never told me. And as a result, I lost the feeling on the left side of my face, most of it. You can't tell. You can't tell, but I know every single day. And I was diagnosed with trigeminal neuralgia, which is a joy too. What can I tell you? So I'm dealing with that. And I had a choice between going to arbitration or going, you know, to take this to court. And I thought about it long and hard, and I understand what you're saying, because it probably would have been better to go through mediation and get it done. The problem is that by the time I got done paying all of my, there's more bills coming and more things that have to be done. And each day that I get up in the morning in pain and have to take 5 Bayer aspirin or whatever, I say to myself, no, this has to go the way it has to go. And I know you're right. They don't tell you that it's going to take forever. And yet, my attorney's been calling me like 7 times a week to ask me questions and to provide the information, which I have. So what happens, do you ever get a case, because this is what's happening with this one, where one of the parties won't bring the information that you need? In other words, medical records and the lawyer's subpoena, blah, 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 and they don't get them? So what do you do then?
Well, for the mediator, no. That would not be a mediation. The court, the judge, or sometimes there's a judge magistrate, is supposed to be overseeing what's called the discovery process, the exchange of documents and information between the parties. Yeah. And you're required to exchange this information. If something's not being exchanged, the court will get involved and order the attorney who's not producing to produce, and there can be sanctions if it's still not produced.
That's
a court-monitored process. Sometimes, because discovery gets so huge and so expensive, especially in this day and age of e-discovery where you need to search X number of computer servers for emails and documents, it gets very expensive, that you will have mediators trying to figure out a way to resolve the dispute between two parties in terms of what documents need to be produced. What do you really need? The court will order whoever's not producing to produce. That's what should happen.
My dentist is
it
not.
Takes
well,
time.
There was a judge assigned to the case already. I can't believe that, too, they told me.
Yeah, right away.
Yeah, they did. They assigned somebody right away. And from what I gather, that normally when a lawyer goes to bring the discovery documents and do whatever to the court, they usually have a clerk. He said he was surprised that the judge sat down with him for over half an hour to discuss the case. I said, how popular can I get? Wow. So, yeah, I was like, oh, goody gumdrops, yay. I said, whenever I'm supposed to be there, just let me know and I'll pencil you in my schedule. But
it's good to have the judge involved because lawyers are less likely to play games when the judge is involved. Because
That's good.
You never want to get the judge angry.
No, and I didn't ask how much money that they're asking for. I didn't ask that question. I didn't ask it at all. I said, when you're ready to tell me, you know, whatever. To be very honest, if it were up to me, I would like the use of my left side of my face back, get rid of the trigeminal neuralgia, and I would be very happy not to have anything. I would be much happier than being this. So there are two types of things. There's liability and damages. And damages, you said, is the monetary compensation, and the liability is the obligation to do or to refrain from doing something right. So when somebody asks for damages, do they sometimes ask for so much that another number has to be, you know, discussed, that they go over the limit, that it's absolutely too far over?
Often. The plaintiff always starts with a high number. No one wants to bid against themselves. The defendant always starts with ridiculously high. The defendant starts with a number that's low, ridiculously low, because they don't want to bid against themselves either. And what the mediation process does is you have somebody who's going to, the parties can talk to, and it becomes a reality check for them. And, you know, they go... It helps them through the decision-making process assess what the case is really worth. So everybody starts high and starts low. It's because you don't negotiate against yourself. You're not going to start out with what you think is your bottom line number because then where do you go?
That's true. But when they're doing this, you're running it, and each side talks at a different time, but they can't talk over each other.
Usually it works. You have what's called a joint session in the beginning where me as the mediator make sure everybody knows who everybody is, so everybody introduces himself or herself. I explain what mediation is because a lot of times some of the parties don't really know what mediation is and they've never been to a mediation, especially the plaintiff. They don't know what's going to happen. So you lay out what the process is. And then, you know, often the attorneys will make a statement as to what their position, what his or her position is. And there'll be some discussion in this joint session. And then you break. And it's called a caucus. And I meet with the plaintiff and we talk about, you know, where they are, what they want. And I let them get as much emotion out as I can. Let them tell me their whole story. They need to be heard. And usually, you know, they want to, you know, give a number to the defendant that they're willing to take. And it's usually their first offer, you know, the first suggestion. And it's usually high. And everybody knows that, so that's okay. And then I go meet with the defendants and I give them the number. And they tell me their side of the case. I tell them how the plaintiff feels. We talk about their strengths and weaknesses. And they give me a number. And you kind of go back and forth till you have some meeting of the minds that you're coming together, the emotions come out, people are prepared to move forward, people are prepared to hear what the other side has to say, because it's not all about what you have to say. You know, the truth always lies somewhere between the two.
Yeah.
No one's all right, no one's all wrong. It's somewhere between the two. I don't know where it is, and quite honestly, neither of the parties knows where it is. So So you just have to kind of go back and forth and get people to see a bigger picture, to understand what they're going to be up against, to understand, you know, you're claiming somebody discriminated against you. I understand that you feel that the person who discriminated against you should be on the defensive, should have to explain himself or herself. And that person will, but you're going to have to explain yourself too. And your credibility becomes a major, major issue in the in the dispute. And people often don't understand that, that their entire life is going to be, you know, raked over the coals.
Do they ever, you ever find that, I mean, I'm good at listening to people, and after reading all these books and books on just about anything, finances, I've reviewed everything. Do you ever find that as you're taking a case that someone contradicts themselves?
Oh, yeah.
Changes their story, and you have to sort of bring them to task and say, you know, you just said this before, you said that before, but did you mean that? That's how I dealt with the arbitration guy, because he kept contradicting himself and kept saying one thing, and then 10 seconds later he changed his tune. So what do you do when somebody contradicts themselves or changes their story, or you know they're twisting it to make it sound right, but it isn't?
You very nicely suggest that they've done that. Because I'm not there to be a judge. I'm not there to be an advocate. I'm there to facilitate a conversation. So you very nicely say, you know, I understand you just said this, but, you know, a little earlier you said that. You know, how does that work?
Yeah.
You know, there are nice ways of doing it. And you kind of, you know, what's really important to you? It's really important to you that you get some justice? Well, you may not get it this way, but how does this work for you? There are ways of beating around the bush, but getting to the bush.
Yeah, it's kind of hard because people get, you know, you don't want people to get angry, and that would be, it's not going to help them. So during a mediation, do conflicts ever arise between the lawyers
what do you
or
mean
between
by
the
conflict?
Defendant? In other words, somebody on the plaintiff's side says one thing and somebody on the defendant's side says another thing. Do they ever get into the point where they argue about something?
Oh, all the time.
Oh, that must be
all the time because the plaintiff and the defendant have, you know, diametrically opposed views.
Yeah.
That's why we're in court all the time.
That must be hard when they start raising their voices or whatever. The trick is to stay calm.
Right. Especially me as a mediator, I try to stay calm. And I try to listen to everybody because I think everybody has something to say. I'm not there to judge. I'm there to facilitate a process. It doesn't matter what I think. It really doesn't.
But at the end, who makes that final decision as far as the judgment? You do, right?
No. The parties do. We go back and forth, and we, you know, slowly the parties come to closer agreement as to what will make the case go away, what will end the case. I'll tell the defendant, you know, the plaintiff needs a little bit more money, or I'll tell the plaintiff, you know, the defendant's really not going to pay you any more money. This is it. You have to decide if it's enough for you to walk away.
What happens if they decide they don't want to walk away, that they want to drag it further? That means they go back into court?
They go back into court. The court process is continuing. This doesn't stop it. They still have discovery obligations. They still have a court-ordered litigation schedule. They still have to meet those deadlines. This is something, it's almost like, you know, there's a kink in the road, but you get back on the same road if you don't take the kink. You know, the kink doesn't stop. So you continue with the litigation. And sometimes people need to do that. Because they're just not ready. They're not ready to let go of the anger. They're not ready to walk away. That's okay, too, just so that they understand that there are costs and consequences of doing that. To me, it's like as long as you take the next step with full knowledge, if that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do.
So you have a checklist before you start, right? So if anyone were to have to understand what they have to know about a mediator. What are the steps that you take? And you can share your checklist with our listeners, right? I have that over here, in order for them to understand the steps that you go through. But before we do that, in other words, mediation is one thing. But let's say someone decides that, I don't know if they could do this afterwards, that they go to arbitration. That's a whole other different way of doing things, right?
Arbitration is a whole other, it's a whole other form of dispute resolution. Arbitration is by contract. The parties agreed to resolve a dispute through arbitration and outside of court. It's done by contract. It's done by mutual agreement. It's either done when you first sign up for a service. Mm-hmm. Like people who open brokerage accounts, when they sign the brokerage account agreement, agree to go to arbitration and not take their claim to court. When you sign a lot of consumer agreements, you agree to resolve any disputes with whoever through arbitration. It's by contract. A lot of commercial disputes, especially in construction, are solved through arbitration. If there's a disagreement or people don't meet deadlines or schedules, they agree at the beginning to go to arbitration rather than court. They do that because arbitration is often faster, more efficient, less costly than litigation. And it will be heard by usually 1 to 3 people, and that's usually also determined in the agreement to arbitrate, who is knowledgeable about the industry, who knows the customs and practices. So that should also streamline the process, make it go faster. So arbitration is a whole different animal. And what happens is that arbitrator or arbitrators will decide the case. You've given them authority through your contract, through your agreement, to have this person outside of court make a final determination on the dispute. And it's usually final. There are not a lot of ways to overturn an arbitration result.
Yeah, I was told that when we went to arbitration, you can't appeal it. It was part of the thing. They said once the arbitrator makes his decision, whether you get a dollar or $10 or whatever, that's just the way it is.
Pretty much. That's true.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. It's an interesting process, I'll tell you that. And I had never been through it before, but yeah, you do, and then they explain it to you, not as well as you explain this, to be very honest. You know, we walked in, and I had said to my sister, "Okay, I'm going to look up arbitration, so I have a little bit of background," and then of course I had my paperwork and my, guns were fully loaded, not a problem, and I had my ammunition. But when you don't know what it is, my first question to him was, how do you run this? What do you do? What are the sides? And he specifically said, you can talk, and he has to be quiet while you're talking. It's different. The other person can't speak until you're done presenting a case. Then that person can present a case. And, of course, I'm sitting there taking notes. He says, do you have any other questions? I go, wait a minute. He said this, this, and that, but that's not true. And my sister was dying there trying to speak. And I go, she can say something. And they only allow one person to speak.
Right. And you're speaking to the arbitrator and not to across the table. Because the arbitrator is the one who make a decision. So, but in mediation, you really want the parties to speak to each other, not to the mediator. I can listen whether you're directly speaking to me or not. But when I'm sitting as an arbitrator, you should speak to me because I'm the one who needs to make a decision. And as the arbitrator, you don't want the parties arguing with each other. You want them to talk to the arbitrator. Not yell at each other across the table, which sometimes happens.
He tried. Yeah, it was interesting. And I finally turned around to the arbitrator and I said, he's speaking to me. He's supposed to speak to you. Do I have your permission to speak to him? He said, go right ahead. And I don't want to laugh. The arbitrator was interesting. Before I left, he looked at me. He said, you're really good. I had to hold my tongue a couple of times, but he realized that the guy was wrong. I didn't think that we were going to get what we got. I thought we would get, who knows, you know, like a token something. And then he said, whatever I give you, you have to pay within 30 days of today or whatever it is. The guy waited till the last day. And I said to my sister, if he doesn't, we're going to get him for a whole lot more. I said, just because he's being obnoxious and ridiculous. But
you know, it's crazy. But in the law, everybody pays on the last day.
Yep.
It's a game. It's just a game.
So the settlement comes about, and everyone has to sign off on it. And you said there can't be a settlement if there's no one on either side. Has that ever happened?
I have attended a mediation where the person with authority was on the telephone. It's not the optimal situation, but if they're on the phone, they can give the attorney the authority to say, okay, this is fine. So you can sign it for us.
But they need attorneys at these particular things, right?
Well, these are lawsuits. So these are disputes have already been filed in court.
Uh-huh.
You could have somebody who's not represented by an attorney, but a lot of courts will provide some type of attorney at a mediation if it's a court-ordered mediation, so the person understands his or her legal rights. Because you don't want somebody to think, oh, that's a lot of money, I should take it, if they might be giving up some other right. So
What happens when there's a person that does? Do you ever have anybody that doesn't speak English? We have to have an
interpreter. I haven't, but you would need an interpreter. Like in an arbitration, if somebody didn't speak English, you would have to get an interpreter because the person has to be provided due process. You can't have somebody who doesn't understand. You have to. You can't have it with. Just like you need to accommodate somebody who has a disability or needs a sign language interpreter, you can have something where somebody can't participate because they're giving up a right. You can't. It's wrong to do that. You can't do that.
Well, I know my nephew is deaf, so he doesn't need any interpreters. He can speak for himself. But yeah, I imagine it gets hard when somebody really doesn't understand. Is there ever a situation where the person really doesn't understand, even though they may speak Spanish or any other language and that there's an interpreter, where they actually don't understand what's happening?
I haven't had that situation, but I have situations where I've had clients, I've represented clients as an attorney who were functionally illiterate and could not read.
Oh, God.
So, you know, when I was representing them, you know, I would have to read, like, my retainer agreement to them. When we were going over documents, it has to all be read and done very slowly to make sure they understand. You really need to be sure that somebody understands what's going on. And people have a lot of pride, and if somebody's functionally illiterate, they don't want you to know, and they don't want anybody else to know that they're functionally illiterate. In some ways, it's worse than a disability such as being deaf because it's very hidden. And it's hard because people really try to have learned how to compensate for it. And they often don't understand, and people think they have more education and more knowledge than they do. Just like somebody could be very street smart and very book stupid.
We know that.
And you know, if somebody really is street smart and really doesn't have a knowledge base, do you hold them to a standard that you would to somebody who's, you know, college educated? And has other, you know, knowledges and experiences. So to know if somebody understands or not, it's really the duty of the attorney representing that person to make sure. As an arbitrator, I need to make sure that as the tribunal, as the decision maker, that everybody there has an opportunity to be heard and to understand. The attorney representing whoever the person is who has whatever disability or limitation or understanding, the attorney representing that person needs to take notice and make sure. I'll provide the interpreter. I'll provide all the tools, but I can't. I don't know the person well enough for long enough to know what they truly understand and what they don't.
Well, the attorney should know that from before, right?
They
should
be
able to. And do they ever rehearse questions? In other words, this is what you might be asked, or this is what you need to be able to know. And if somebody really has a difficulty and can't express themselves, do they ever get someone else to speak for them?
You can't have somebody else speak for you. You cannot. You have to be your own witness. You can't. You have to tell your story. Attorney prepares his or her client and his or her witnesses to testify.
That's
and you go over this question could be asked. You know, saying something in this way could have this meaning. You know, what do you really want to say? And you help people. You know this as an author and as somebody who reviews books and movies. Two people can hear the exact same sentence and walk away with a different meaning.
That is so true.
Well, what you try to do as the attorney is to help people not make statements that can have two or three meanings. You really help people with clarity. And that's a very difficult thing.
Yeah.
You really learn how language is a tool in a way, I mean, maybe other than authors, people don't really do. It's such a big part of law.
You'd be surprised, as a reviewer, that I'm mind-boggled sometimes. I actually read the book. Everybody out there, I actually read the book. And the authors will say to me, "You know, friend, you saw more in this book than I knew I wrote. Or you saw a deeper meaning into what I was saying." And if it's a book like a historical fiction or history book or has some kind of research in it, I'm going to research your research to make sure that what you're writing is credible. And I'll tell you if it's not before I even post the review. You have to. But there are reviewers, and I won't name who, I don't read people's reviews. I post something on Amazon, and if I'm curious to know what other people think about it, I crack up laughing because half the time they don't read the book. My mother said the book was great, or the book is excellent, or there are several reviewers, and I won't say who they are, that just reword the back cover. And there were several, and they're quite well known. From what I see, that they'll take a few reviews that are there, reword them, and make it their own. And I'm like, no one gets the deeper meaning of what the person's saying. I mean, people are paying hundreds of dollars for book reviews, and I'm free. Just Reviews is a free service that I provide. That's my thing. I'm called Just Reviews. And I don't charge people for reviews, and Amazon says you're not supposed to get paid or they won't let you post your reviews, yet there are a whole bunch of places that we know about that charge $500 and $600, and they do post their reviews on Amazon, and people are paying for them. And I review for a whole bunch of sites. I review for publishing companies, and I review for Book Pleasures. And Book Pleasures provides, and a whole bunch of other places provide, express reviews. Express reviews, but you get charged. And if you want to review within 5 to 7 days, it's going to cost you sometimes between $150 and $200 on some review sites. I just tell you it's going to take me 8 days to do it, and I'm not going to charge you. I'll do the best I can. But I, at this point, I've got 40 books inside, and they're just staring at me. And I just got another one just now, Philip Margolin, A Woman with a Gun. That looks good. So when
great
you
title.
Choose it, yeah, it is a great title. It's a great cover. He saw a painting of some type, and he used the painting in order to write the novel about a photographer that might have killed her husband. And this one looks actually really good. But first I'm reading a dystopian novel by Chris Diesel, which is about a group of people, scientists, that are experimenting, and the government that has gone haywire, and anybody that goes against them, any country, they blow them up. and they've developed a world filled with tyranny. His writing is dark, but actually it's pretty good. So something, I'm reading. You never know what
I'm going to read. It's a popular topic right now.
Yeah, the apocalypse, and this one is a triple apocalypse. But from what I gather, he's bringing the world to an end, and then they're trying to start it from where it began. So we'll see. But when you choose a mediator, what are the qualities that a mediator, that somebody needs to look for to know that they're picking the right person?
Well, when you choose a mediator, you want somebody who is familiar with that area of the law. So if it's an employment dispute, somebody who's familiar with employment law or securities law or medical malpractice or dental malpractice or construction, and you want someone who's neutral. You want someone who's neutral because you want both parties to trust the mediator, that the mediator is not advocating a point of view or making a judgment. You don't, the mediator is not just, you know, it's not for the mediator to say, you know, the plaintiff should get more money because, you know, you're not advocating for the plaintiff. You're not advocating for the defendant. You're facilitating this conversation. So it's important that you represent both sides equally or fairly.
Yeah, that makes it hard, doesn't it? I mean, do you ever sit down and listen and say to yourself, well, in your mind, you ever say in your mind, oh, well, this is really, this side is better prepared than the other, or I believe this side, but you're not going to say that more than the other?
I do definitely think some sides are more prepared than the other, and I do appreciate the preparation because when one side is really well prepared, it makes the mediation go much smoother. So I really appreciate that, and I do notice it. And I do notice when some attorneys are sloppy. And then
I would imagine.
They're not adding up their damages correctly because the law provides only certain damages. Well, I don't understand how you got that number. You need to explain that to me so I can explain it to the defendant. If you can't explain it, you're not going to get it.
Well, that's
so
the point.
Sometimes there's some sloppiness where they don't have precision, and precision helps. It's all the backup. You need the backup. So I like it if you're more prepared because it makes my job easier. But if you're not, we'll do it there at the mediation. It's my job is to facilitate the conversation. I'll do it however I need to do it. Do I sometimes believe one side more than the other? Not really, because I don't know where the truth lies. I'm not seeing all the evidence. I'm not hearing all the witnesses. I'm only hearing part of it. So I don't really, I can't make a judgment because, well, I don't feel I can make a judgment because I don't have all the facts and all the evidence in front of me.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I have a limited pool, and I have what I need for this conversation. If the mediation's later in the case, I would have more. But again, I'm there to facilitate the conversation. So where there's a gap or where one side has a question for the other side, I will carry, you know, we explore that question and try to provide the other side with the answer. But I don't really have a judgment as to who's right or who's wrong.
Yeah,
but I do really appreciate precision.
I like preparation too, and I'm a very prepared person. And
you'd be a good lawyer.
You know what? That's funny that you should say that because I just reviewed a book yesterday on graphology, handwriting analysis, and how you use personality to judge. And I'm looking at this book and I'm going like, they expect me to do this. How am I supposed to review this? Well, I did the exercises, but the exercises were for students. And college students that have no direction and want to know where they fit in and what they should do. My mother told me when I was 3 1/2, seriously, that I was going to be an educator and that I was going to work with children with learning disabilities and reading, which I did. I did. And I loved what I did, but she had Alzheimer's and I had to retire early. So, unfortunately, I didn't do it anymore. And my sister dared me to write a book review. I have no clue what possessed her. She said, I make a bet that you read so much, why don't you just write a book review? I go, okay, I'm going to get some strange person, which I did, to send me a book to review it. I said, are you out of your mind? I don't know what I'm doing. So the first book I ever did was Martha Cheeves' Stir, Laugh, and Repeat. It's a cookbook, and Fran doesn't know the first end of a stove. I don't cook, ever. And this cookbook was hilarious because she's telling all these personal stories about the recipes and how they came to place. So I go, move over, Emeril Lagasse, Rachel Ray, Paula Deen, make way for the queen of Southern cooking, Martha Cheeves. And I wrote a review that was hysterical. Literally, she literally fell on the floor. After that, everybody kept started to send me their books out of nowhere. So, I mean, you just, my mother said to me, okay, before she didn't understand, you really should have been a lawyer because now you have a big mouth and you speak for yourself and you can reason and you know how to get around things. I said, Ma, you're lucky that I developed this kind of edge because otherwise I wouldn't have been able to deal with Medicare, Medicaid, and all the people that I had to deal with in order to get you the services that you want. Yeah. I was in Bronx court once, thank God, oh, Lord, and I got caught on a case. And they were saying something, it was a sister-in-law suing a brother-in-law, and it was an ambulance worker, and the guy said something about it, and my eyes flared up, and he looked at me, took me out, he says, why did you look like that? I go, well, it's a brother-in-law and sister-in-law, what's to say that they're not going to share in the, they're suing each other, and they're going to share the money. Of course, I got bumped off, but that's okay, because I didn't care. But he looked at me, he says, you're reasoning. I go, I'm listening to what is being said. I said, even the ambulance driver has his own story that doesn't make sense, and you didn't even present your case. I said, I could tell you now, I would side with none of them. I said, and you don't really want, he said, well, you don't really want anybody that smart on it. So before we go, question. We talked about arbitration and mediation. What type of cases are the most difficult?
In mediation, the cases that are most difficult are when it's very early in the process. Mm. The person who's bringing the lawsuit has a lot of anger, and that person's attorney has dangled a very large number in front of them.
Mm.
Those are very difficult because the person's not yet willing to give up the anger and settle.
That's
and
hard.
Because you're settling for something much less than the maximum. The person's not even close to that point.
Wow.
And those are very difficult because you just it's very hard to break through that. And, you know, and the most difficult cases to mediate are the cases where somebody really wants justice. Justice in more than just money, that they really want to hurt the other side the way they feel they were hurt. That's just really difficult.
That's vengeance.
Because it's very hard to get that anger out, and I think those just need more time. They're not ripe for mediation early. The person needs more time, more distance.
So then they have to revisit it another time.
They have to revisit it later.
I would say. So I get what you're saying. So they can actually come back and do mediation again?
Yes. There's no end date for it.
I see what you're saying.
The end date is, you know, when the jury comes in with a decision.
Well, that's good. At least they're not locked. I guess if they were in arbitration, then they wouldn't have that opportunity. They just have to take whatever it is that was decided.
Right.
So before we go, tell everybody where they can find out more about you.
Well, they can find out more about me on my website, Marcia Adelson, Marcia, MarciaDelson, law.com. More information about me than most people would ever want to know. and they'll really see what my views are about mediation and arbitration and why mediation is such an effective tool and an important tool for resolving disputes. I mean, I just shudder when I think of the cost of litigation, that there's just got to be a better alternative. I mean, it's just, you know, In litigation, you'll exchange tens of thousands of pages of documents, and you'll only need 10 at trial, but all of those pages must be reviewed. It's just the time and the cost and the emotional cost to the participants is huge. It's huge.
I can imagine.
I just think there's got to be a better way. And as an arbitrator, and I really do believe in arbitration as well, I think I'm really impartial and unbiased. And where I do have a bias, I'm aware of it and know how to leave it outside the room if
That's
I'm
good.
Hearing a case. Because it's really about people getting a fair hearing. And I think I can do that. And I think I'm good at it.
No, you are good. You sound good.
Thank you.
I will let you know as soon as we are deciding to buy my co-op. So if I need help, I know who to go to. we're gonna find out some bank rates over the weekend, and then I think we're supposed to get an assessment of the building, and then of the apartment, and then we'll see what happens. And after that, if I need help, I know where to go. But I want to thank you
so
much.
I'm one of the few attorneys who's not a math phobic.
Uh-huh. So I want to thank you. This is really interesting. And
I want to thank you.
And so this is my eyes don't bug out anymore. I'm going to take the interview that you wrote the answers to, and I'm not going to put them all out at once. I'm going to put them out in a couple of days so that everybody could read them.
Okay,
so
great.
Everybody could read it. And this way they can know more about you. And whoever missed the show, I don't know why they would miss it. The link is out there on Blog Talk Radio, and it goes under Book Discussion with Fran Lewis. And those of you that want to come and listen next week, best-selling author Ben Lieberman is going to be here with The Carnage Account. It's a really scary mystery thriller, bloody, very gross. It's terrific. It's absolutely fantastic. And on my new show, Let's Write, December 23rd at 4, Tess Gerritsen, we're going to talk about her book, how she put it together, how she wrote it, Die Again, and You'll Never Go on an African Safari After That. January 15th, New York Times bestselling author Vincent Zandri will be here with Moonlight Weeps. And A.J. Sadowski wrote a book called Forgiving Maximo, a really interesting story about a Jewish man that lost his faith and why. And that's going to be January 22nd at 10. After that, I just booked a show for March 26th, but we have time before that. So
You're
thank
busy.
You so much. And we're going to have to get together for coffee. We're going to have to do this. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
We'll figure out a way. Thank you so much, everybody, and have a nice night. Good night.
Thank you, Fran.